Welcome to Modern Practice, the podcast where you hear strategies to help you adapt to the new normal to clinical practice in this era of COVID-19. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, and on this episode, we'll be focusing on engaging patients when resuming electively scheduled surgeries and procedures. Winning back patient confidence is key to this process. Joining me is Dr. Joe Geske. Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself and your current role at Vizient.
Good morning, Tom. I'm currently a principal of data analytics and member insights at Vizient. I came from academic medicine and also a chief medical officer role prior to joining Vizient, and have had a lot of experience in both administrative and clinical practice.
Glad to have you here, Joe, and thanks for coming. So, Joe, you and I had the pleasure in participating in a joint Vizient and SG2 guidance for resumption and management of electively scheduled surgeries and procedures. So, why did the physicians at Vizient feel it was necessary to write this paper?
Tom, that's a great question. I think the biggest answer was we realized that these are unprecedented times. I mean, yeah. I wasn't around in 1917 or 1918 with the Spanish flu, but I think COVID-19 has foundationally changed a lot of aspects in our life. And currently, with some of the uncertainties around the virus, patients really looking for more information, we wanted to make sure that as institutions started analyzing this, they really kept their patients in mind, because we really want them to be a trusted partner in healthcare. And also, even though that there is certainly a business need for restarting surgery, we want to make sure patient safety remains preeminent in the minds of healthcare administrators. And we felt that by conducting this document, it would allow at least us to bring the patient voice so that it's not excluded when these decisions are being made.
Absolutely, Joe. And this podcast will be actually concentrating on patient engagement as a strategy towards revamping elective procedures. This is actually a key competitive advantage. So to hear all about the components needed to resume elective procedures and the entire paper itself, we ask you to listen to a recent podcast by our colleague, Dr. Jay Pertoski. So, Joe, in looking at gaining, or in some cases regaining, consumer trust, how important is that to our strategy to resuming elective procedures?
Tom, I actually think that people and healthcare facilities that do this well with partnership of the community and patient family advisory councils, if they have one, I think it really, really can give a competitive advantage, so that patients feel and they can tell their friends and neighbors how prepared the healthcare facility was to not only deliver care safely, but feel like both visually and via communication that all their concerns were appropriately addressed. And if you look at it as a play, the players that were on stage, the physicians, the ancillary staff, right, were all conducting roles that were very comforting to patients and their families. And I think that can lead to a competitive advantage, again, for companies and for hospitals that do this with the participation of their patients.
So listening to the patient's voice is a competitive advantage. That's always been the case, but now specifically after the surgeon, we're revamping per se, it's more important now than ever. Do you believe that that's actually top of mind for our members?
You know, Tom, that's a great question. I think a lot of people, from what we've been hearing across the country, have recognized that they have to do this correctly. And I think most facilities realize that certainly not having elective surgery has hurt their bottom line. Right. But I think everyone has really been concentrating on how we do this effectively and how we do this safely. Right. Because I think the worst possible aspect is if patients feel that we're doing this just to have an economic gain. And that's clearly not the case of our members. I think they're really, really focusing on hard, because they're looking at some of the morbidity that patients are suffering from. If some of them are in pain, right, pre-COVID times, scheduling a surgery would not be a problem. But now, obviously, with the virus, there's many, many other steps that need to be taken. And I really do believe that physicians, surgeons, and hospital administrators and the staff, right, really want to help patients get better and resume their active lives.
So I have to ask, though, is there any indications right now that patients do feel safe to return to facilities, particularly for an elective procedure?
You know, I think, Tom, since we've been getting feedback at Vizient, it's really, really been interesting hearing people's perceptions. And I think it's really important for each area of the country to find a way to engage the patients that they take care of. Because what we've heard in some areas is that actually some younger folks actually are less concerned in the fact that if they needed an elective procedure, they would go ahead and get it scheduled. Whereas people who were older and people who had comorbid conditions like hypertension or diabetes or heart failure or things like that, they're much more nervous. And I think explaining that and recognizing the elephant in the room, I think it has to be proactively addressed by actually the proceduralist or the surgeon or the gastroenterologist or the pulmonologist who's doing, or an interventional radiologist, whoever's doing the procedure.
Right.
People have to be able to address that in plain language to the patient so that they actually understand and can truly participate in shared decision making.
So we'll talk about shared decision making in a minute, but also, you know, the elephant in the room is actually the question about testing. So the paper indicates the importance of testing for COVID and surveillance, but let's be honest, at the time of this recording, Joe, there's really no guidance on when to test and how to test prior to having a procedure. What's the importance of communicating that effectively to our patients and particularly their families as well?
Tom, I think you hit probably the most important aspect of this entire issue. And I think, you know, again, getting back to sustaining a competitive advantage, if you're able to answer those questions succinctly and clearly, and your staff is able to highlight that message,
right,
I think it'll go a long, long way. I think we have to be honest and say that there are certainly some unknowns, but I think it's important, even as we explain this, that we still communicate to the patient that we will be following you, we'll be checking up on you. We want to hear if you're having any symptoms, because there is a percentage of these tests that are falsely negative, meaning that the test in the patient says that they don't have COVID, but right, after they go through their procedure, they come back home and start developing symptoms of COVID, that it's important to be able to have a venue where patients can communicate with providers and be able to help guide them on next steps. So I think transparency is key. And I think certain things like teach back and ensuring that you hear as a healthcare worker that the patient actually understands what you're saying will demonstrate not only to the patient, but also to you that he or she has really, really heard the message. I think otherwise, with all these complex features of COVID and using false positive, false negative, it is really going to confuse a lot of patients.
You know, you mentioned about a couple of things there, Joe. The first part was that of consistency. Let's be honest, we've both worked at large systems where sometimes consistency and communication among all stakeholders is an opportunity. But I think what you're trying to say is that now more than ever, there has to be consistency from every stakeholder in the facility.
Yeah, Tom, one of the best things that I learned progressing in medical management is to act like a business owner.
Okay.
And I don't mean to say that healthcare providers should look at themselves as business people, they're caregivers, but there's an analogy there. And it means if you're a business owner, it means you take ownership. It means doing things like picking up trash in the hallway. It means showing up on the front lines and supporting your workers. The equivalent to that in communication is really being able to convey a concept to people and demonstrate empathy that you're present with them, you're hearing what they're saying.
Right.
And if need be, if people are scared and anxious, I think it's okay to cancel the procedure and reschedule it at another time. Because again, we've had so many reports even before COVID on people who were impoverished, who had limited health literacy,
right,
who really have a difficult time understanding concepts and how the modern hospital works. What a better time to utilize this crisis to show that everyone, including the environmental associate who's gowned and gloved and is cleaning the facility in a great way, to the people who are checking you in and greeting you with a smile, this is really an opportunity for us to develop a new normal and really develop a true patient experience for people who are coming into our facilities.
So going back to new normal, teach back is something I've been doing quite some time in my practice, and I find it to be immensely valuable. But what is the most effective tool to accomplish this, Joe?
Tom, I think the easiest way to do this is really to practice. If you're not experienced on doing this, pull a colleague aside or a friend aside and just say, look, I'm going to teach you something. Could even be something when I practice communication skills in group settings. I ask people on one-on-one situations to describe a vacation, describe 3 points that you want to get across about your vacation, and then have the person be able to teach back to you those 3 important points. And it's interesting. I've done communication seminars in many, many venues. And it's rare that in an entire group audience filled with people who are highly educated, that there's not at least 1 or 2 instances where people forgot what the points were because we're distracted. Sure. And again, people who are impoverished and have lots of cognitive burden and they're just trying to find a way to survive day to day, healthcare may not be their most preeminent issue. It might be transportation. It might be obtaining food. It might be paying bills. So I think being able to recognize and empathize with people to say that you're really, really going to slow down, talk in a 5th grade conversational level so that you feel assured that the patient understands will alleviate a lot of problems with the patient-physician relationship.
So, okay, Joe, let's be realistic here. Shared decision making sounds nice. It sounds like a nice thing to do, but we're talking about unprecedented times here. Ramping up elective procedures is critical for many, if not all, of our members. Is this just a nice thing to do?
Again, I think getting back to what we've stated a couple times here, I think it's really a competitive business advantage. I mean, heck, you look at all our hospitals typically have high-tech imaging equipment. They got high-tech medicines. They got wonderful physicians and nurses who are technically skilled. So to me, the competitive advantage, everyone there has the same equipment. It's how you really experience the trust, the communication, that people feel that you're really, really caring about the individual and his or outcome. Right. And the only way to me to be able to do that is if you do shared decision making. And those really are 3 components, Tom. It's called choice talk, option talk, and decision talk. And choice talk really conveys an awareness that a choice exists. So that if a proceduralist or a surgeon is doing something, patients don't necessarily have to feel that's the only option. They do have a choice if they're not feeling comfortable or if they want to ask more questions. The options is really are informed about the treatment options in more detail. So what's the benefits and risks of waiting for this elective surgery? What other medicines can we try to help improve or stabilize the condition till COVID is less of an issue? And then decision talk, and really outlining what exists for the patients and using ancillary materials, things like handouts, things like videos, to be able to supplement the discussion so that patients can really make an informed decision. And I think, you know, even querying patients afterward, how do they feel about their choices that were explained to them? How do they feel that the institution did about conveying their choices? And I think, again, done very, very well, it is an absolute competitive advantage for our members, for people who are able to do this.
So I'm hearing you, Joe. And I think that when we came away with all the physicians, and it was actually pretty much the majority of the physicians within Vizient itself that participated in writing this white paper, we felt that patient engagement as a form of gaining consumer trust was a competitive advantage. And that the way of doing that is by using shared decision making and helping members understand the importance of having that choice talk, the option talk, and then leading them towards a decision. So let's talk about how we communicate to patients themselves. So I've had a long saying, you and I wear a white coat for a living. We pretty much hang out with other people that wear white coats for a living. Heck, we intermarry with other people that wear white coats for a living. And, you know, we have our own language, if you will. Yes. So based on that, is there something we need to take into account when we communicate with patients and their families?
Yeah, you know, my greatest experience and the aha moment for me is I would go and do home visits to patients who had limited health literacy. And one of the best compliments I ever received from patients was in a gentleman who had a catheter in his bladder. He had oxygen on him. He had diabetes. He was on pain medicine. And when I first met him, I asked him how he was doing, and he said, great. And I thought, wow, if somebody had all this stuff, medical stuff in them, and were not complaining, wow, it just shows you how much adaptive people are to their health conditions. But as we were speaking about how he can improve his health, at the end of the conversation, he said, Doc, you're not like other docs. And I started to hesitate there. And I'm like, oh gosh, what did I do to mess up? He says, you talk to me like I'm a human. And I think what that meant to me was all the difference in the world, that it's okay to be blessed with a great medical vocabulary and to speak efficiently, although you might be technically correct. I've found for a lot of my career, I was over assuming what people were understanding in my communication. And it wasn't until I used TeachBack, it wasn't until I almost deliberately looked at so that I didn't feel like English was a second language, meaning that I would sit and actually pause for situations where I had said things a million times and I found myself having to slow down and almost look at English as a second language because I was so enamored with medical terminology that I had to break it down and relearn how to communicate to patients. And to me, I felt that that was a seminal moment in my career. And I feel like for the past decade or so, I've been much more effective because I realize I have to speak differently than I do to my colleagues and my peers.
That's great insight, Joe. Does that communication also mean the pros and cons in postponing a procedure?
Absolutely. One of the questions I would ask is to hear stories about our members saying, when would you cancel a surgery? Because a patient really didn't understand what he or she was getting into. To me, that's almost like stopping the line when somebody sees a safety barrier being breached. I can't think of a better humanistic response to say, hey, look, although we felt like we gave the patient enough information, he or she really was anxious, was concerned about, didn't understand it, and we don't want to jeopardize our trust in our relationship. I think much like we reward anyone to stop the line if they see an unsafe practice when doing a procedure, I think those same individuals should be commended in making sure that a patient safety is preeminent.
So importance of actually not only talking about helping them lead to a decision, but also what the end results are going to be if they proceed versus actually postponing the procedure are going to be important in that discussion.
Absolutely.
You've mentioned about having a patient and family advisory council, also known as a PFAC. Unfortunately, it's the greater part of the organizations in our membership do have one. What should they do now to leverage them?
Tom, I think one of the creative things that I think have been happening with medicine during these times is really leveraging telehealth communications. Many people are adapting this working from home. Physicians are certainly psychiatrists, dermatologists, primary care physicians are leveraging technology to still treat patients and care for them, even though social distancing is being practiced and some offices may be closed for non-emergent procedures. But I think what a better way to leverage technology is if you have a patient family advisory council to get them on the line and to conduct a virtual visit, a town hall, if you will. Even if you don't have a patient family advisory council, if you have a board of directors for your hospital, many of them may be lay people, asking them what they're hearing, what concerns them as board members, I think it could get a phenomenal insight of what it is people are thinking about. And I would venture to say that what people are thinking about are a whole lot different than what you're discussing in your operational meetings to get elective surgeries restarted.
What a great way of saving several hundred thousand dollars of consulting fees just by listening to the, by listening directly to your consumer. What a concept. So, Joe, do you know how organizations could get their hands on this white paper?
on the podcast page, there'll be a link to the paper that we're referring to about reopening for elective surgeries. And what I like about it is it has multiple physicians and people from SG2 that looked at modeling and testing for COVID. And so we have a lot of experience, not only clinically, administratively, but also strategically for our members to be successful in following the guidelines of the paper.
Thanks, Joe. And that'll be available in the resource section of this podcast. Joe, thanks for joining us. It was great information. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks so much for listening.